Hello, dear friends, and welcome to another episode of Life of Love, where we gather every week to discuss and plan and create the life of love that we dream to have and share our lives of love to promote happiness and peace and loving unconditional love, acceptance. So today is a very special day. Ben Ufana is here. He's a world traveler, and he doesn't really stay in one place very long, as you'll get to learn. And I just welcome you to listen to his messages with, you know, an open heart, and just really excited for him to share his journeys. And I want to get right into it because there's so much to cover, and you've had such a great life of figuring out how to connect with yourself, how to be happy, how to be healthy. And now you're always helping people heal, and you've woven in several wisdom traditions. Well, everything's a wisdom tradition, but your primary experiences were ignited through American Indians, the Native Americans. You left home as a 17-year-old, I understand. And then you sort of went on a vision quest. You know, you offer something very unique and special. So I'd love for people to get a snapshot of that.
Well, initially, I was drawn to Native Americans and other Indigenous peoples from a very early age, even early childhood. And the fascination continued to grow in adolescence when I was learning about the traditional Native American doctors, thinking to myself, as I heard about these profound missionary experiences and the gifts and powers they possessed, and it's like, wow, if ever given the opportunity, this is what I'll do with my life. Oh. So by the time I was 17, having saved up enough money, bought a car, still in high school, took off on my own, landed in a community, predominantly Kiowa Indians in southwestern Oklahoma. That's where my car died.
Spirit's like, this is where you need to be, Ben. We're going to dump you here.
So I ended up at the Jodi meetings with Native elders, and they made an exception for me, partly because I had this younger friend about my age, and he introduced me to his father, who was at that time acting president in the Native American church, the local chapter of the Kiowa tribe. And some of the other Native elders were not initially comfortable, but this elderly man, Jack, he held a lot of clout, and he just said, this one is different. Let him come in. And so they deferred his authority. And it was during the Peyote meetings, I met my mentor, Horace Dolkai, who was one of the last surviving traditional doctors among the Kiowa tribe. And during the apprenticeship, I was initially very afraid that he would say, well, this only works for Native people, but was physically shaking. I was so afraid that he would brush me off.
And like, what were you going to do if he denied you? Like, this is your dream. It's very scary to reach that yes or no, right?
Yeah, he said, can you start fasting this weekend? And I was trembling, and yeah, sure. And so you drive down into the Wichita Mountains, not eating or drinking the next 2 days and nights. And I don't know that anything much really happened on that occasion other than it was his way of determining if I was serious.
Your commitment, yeah.
My commitment. And then 2 days later, when I showed up at a peyote meeting he had conducted, and he just says, when you finish your semester, college, come on out to New Mexico, where he lived on the Navajo Reservation. And a lot of these Native doctors possess paranormal abilities. And so he would do things like take the end of a feather and physically project it into my body. It felt like this extraordinarily powerful force impacting me, and I'd go into something akin to a mini seizure as he would do that. And I would feel this extraordinary power beginning to awaken within me. The vision quest is typically 4 days and nights with no food and no water, alone in the mountains or some other remote wilderness area. So it had me fasting in order to earn the right to work with these gifts of healing, and then gradually assisting him as he worked with his patients, one of the first instances, Navajo man who was injured when a piece of heavy equipment, I don't know if it's a bulldozer, front end loader, and he was pinned underneath, left him paralyzed from the waist down. Yeah, they would take like the end of a buffalo horn or sometimes just mouth directly to the part of the body and use that suction. And when I saw the blood clots come out of the back of this man's leg,
he didn't even apply a syringe or anything. It was just like the breath or a buffalo horn
and
extracted the blood clots.
But I've seen my mentor, where someone was suffering from pneumonia or some other condition, that suction, and he would literally, and a lot of the Native doctors for years, maybe centuries, had done that suction. Now, that practice kind of fell out of use with HIV/AIDS, which that was when I was during the height of the AIDS pandemic, or maybe at the beginning, when AIDS was spreading rapidly, and it's like, wow, if you're doing that extraction, that blood, that bodily fluid, and if you get that
into your mouth, yeah.
Stuff like this. And also the fact that these medications people were taking were so highly concentrated, you could get that into your body as well. So there was considerable risk. So now as I work with people, I don't utilize that specific technique or whatever it is. Occasionally, maybe like 1 out of 30 people or something might physically throw up, their body's releasing all that toxin. Again, it's a small minority, 1 out of 30. It's more common there will be people that will be in the toilet. I'll say it wasn't their normal bowel movement. Purging.
Body's just getting rid of it.
Getting rid of a lot of toxin. Their body starts flushing out. And I have people at times where they're holding. So many people, the abdominal region, it becomes a toxic waste dump because it's one of the largest repositories of all the stress and emotion, the traumas that people carry. One of the largest concentrations of it is in the abdominal region. And many people just inhabit their body, say, from the diaphragm up, and some it's from the throat up. And so as I work with people, what happens is it's like it's taking more of their soul or presence, grounding them into their bodies. And what I see initially is like that abdominal area, there could be all kinds of bloating and distension and their major digestive issues in many instances, such as colitis, IBS, bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, all that. So as I'm working with these individuals, and even in more severe instances where they're pain and passing blood in their stools, all that, their digestive tract heals and they become way more embodied, present in their bodies, present in the world. So it's cleaning all this toxic waste dump. It's cleaning it out. And that's important because we see a lot of the, if you look at the destruction of the planet and the wars and a lot of the abuses perpetrated towards children, animals, just humanity in general, and so much of that is because we have this huge disconnect. And even a lot of people who are supposedly spiritual, but in this culture, again, when we don't fully inhabit our bodies and when we avoid, deny, suppress, disconnect from our emotions, we don't want to face issues, we don't want to go there, we create this profound disconnect in ourselves, and that's our shadow. This can become this manifestation. For many people, it manifests eventually as illness or disconnection in their relationships, but it manifests collectively and the destructive forces that are destruction of the planet and the war dwarves and other violets. And so the more we go there, we face the issues, we feel the feelings, we address the issues head on, the more present we become, the more we heal and transform these parts of ourselves to offset that destructive force or destructive forces that are at work on the planet. So we're doing our part to facilitate the healing, not just of ourselves, but those around us. And
This is so special. This is such a you say it in a such a loving and all encompassing way, and I agree 200,000,000% with everything you're saying. Like if you're thinking about the law of one and being connected and honoring your sacred being and everything that's happening in and around it, that transforms the world, because you're not going to eat things that make you feel bad. And all of a sudden we're not producing, nobody's buying food that's bad for them anymore. So that industry goes away, and we don't have to have a lawmaker say, don't let them put these chemicals in our food. Well, nobody's eating that crap anymore because it doesn't feel good. We don't have to have our government tell us how to live. We don't have to have these toxic waste dumps because nobody, or doesn't resonate with your body to do that kind of factory production. Like it just makes everything, it boils things down to like this very manageable thing, which is yourself. And like, like you said, the illness, it's because you're not paying attention to what's happening in your body. So your body's crying out, and you get these blocks in your energies because you've ignored it. And it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. I'm so happy that you're sharing this in this way, because it's very pertinent to everything that's happening in our world.
Yeah, we do want to be a little careful, because there are illnesses that result from exposure to environmental toxins.
Yes.
Cancer, for instance, is rocketed because we're exposed to chemicals. Toxicity of one form or another. And also there are lottery diseases that are hereditary, that are passed down through generations, that don't necessarily have to do with any kind of emotional wounding. But touching back on what you said earlier too, it's important to understand that our attraction to, you go into supermarkets and it's just aisle after aisle of just garbage. Mm-hmm. Artificial food substitutes that consume. And the fact that the greater extent of our emotional wounding are when we're numbing, denying, disconnecting, we're not wanting to care, we're not feeling it, doing the deep level processing of our lived experiences and emotions, then we're more drawn to smoke cigarettes or to eat garbage foods, refined sugars that contribute to our numbing, our dissociation, our disconnect. And the further you go in your healing, then you start losing your taste for alcohol. And there's no need to. I have many people, as I work with them, it's like, I don't need to be on these psychotropic meds. Now, what may be the best known solution if they're delusional and they're a danger to themselves and others, but you have many people that rely on antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds because they do have a history of trauma. They've never learned to work constructively with their emotions, and they have not yet found the specific interventions that are helping them to work to heal and transform those traumas. But the more we do so, as we go through the steps to heal and we cleanse our bodies, we go through this evolution, so there's less need to self-medicate by eating too much or eating foods that further numb and deaden and disconnect us.
Yeah, this I wanted to ask you. This whole idea that, experiencing your emotions, letting them run through is really a powerful thing. And so many times our superpowers are things that are right in front of us that we take for granted, but nobody else can do it. And like nobody else can feel our emotions for us. We can't talk to somebody and say, oh, you're feeling this. you have to feel your own emotions. So I wanted to ask you, you know, if someone's starting out on this journey and they're like, I really want to start doing some of this contemplative work, and maybe it'll lead to some energetic work, but, you know, I don't even know what's going on because I'm so disconnected from my body. What would be a sign that you're in denial of your emotions? Like, are there physiological signs you see in people? Like, this person is just saying, I just want to be aware of my emotions. I don't even know how to connect. Like, what are some signs that they're not connected? So someone can say, oh, that's what I'm doing right now.
There are so many ways in which we act out. You know, this, you see it manifest in like the dramas that play out. We find that when we avoid the pain, we don't want to look at or feel our authentic responses, then we hold on to individuals who are not good for us, that causes more, evoke more painful emotion, more distress. And the more that I could fully acknowledge what was happening and feel my authentic emotional responses, those attachments began to dissolve. But you see people that, you know, the frequency of which the percentage of society that self-medicates with alcohol or other recreational drugs are excessive consumption of material goods that our planet cannot sustain our level of consumption, because there's the extraction of material resources, there's the waste that's created or pollution in manufacturing these items, there's the waste as we throw these products away. And, you know, in these traditions, too, it's not just this floaty love and light. You know, you have warriors in these traditions among the Native Americans in China. The reason the martial arts were developed is because they were overrun by the Mongol hordes. And they developed this profound fighting arts to such a level. Well, at the same time, there was a tremendous spiritual practice incorporated in that too, where they were developing their bodies and minds and developing their connection to the higher power.
Mm-hmm. It's not just violence. It's about awareness and spirituality and connection and being connected to your values. Yes. You know, so you're fighting for something that is part of your mission. You're not a mission to conquer, but a mission that you're going to protect things that are dear to you, the people and the values and the ideals. Not going to let someone bully you. Yeah. Wow. So I want to get back to like how a person knows you mentioned there's things in our society that show that we're not connecting to our emotions, but how would a person know that they're disconnected? Like, what are some signs that a person, I just want to get down to like that individual.
Again, our inclination, the extent to which we need to self-medicate, either eating too much food, eating foods that are toxic, that do not nourish our bodies, garbage foods that cause our bodies to break down, our need, is that the right word? Or inclination to smoke?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a person who finds themselves having deep cravings, like I've got to get a glass of wine, or I need to get out there and smoke and vape. It's like this. It's more than I'd like to really relax. You know, or maybe you need that to relax. You can't just relax because you're deciding to relax. You're dependent on a substance. How about like if you notice your breathing is really shallow? Would that be a sign that you're not connecting to your body and your emotions?
Definitely, because the more discomfort we hold in our bodies, then what happens is we inhabit less of our bodies. And one way that manifests is the shallow breathing. And as we purposefully, and I guide people to do this, breathing all the way down to your abdomen while expanding your rib cage, then it brings more awareness or presence into your body. And the more you do that, it can bring up emotions and memories and bodily sensations that you might not initially be comfortable with. But what I do is I teach people this practice. Not only do you breathe deeply, as I'm instructed, but at the same time, you're being as present as you possibly can. A lot of people are self-medicating in one, or medicating in one form or another, because they feel such a profound sense of discomfort within their own bodies. They don't like what they feel. And they don't know what to do with it. And so what I teach people to do is, and this is one of the most basic practices, I teach these practices either in person or at a distance over the phone, is that to start by acknowledging what's happening. What's going on in your life that's triggering you emotionally? That's one. Two, what do you feel in response to it? What are the physical sensations? What are the emotions? Three, where do these feelings land in your body? Where are they situated? In your chest cavity, down in your abdomen, solar plexus, maybe up in your face or towards the back of your neck. It can be in a number of locations. Bring as much awareness as you can to where the feelings are situated. Fully immerse your awareness in feelings and sensations. You're not trying to change them. Sprinkling fairy dust on them. You're not trying to bring them out. You're not sending light to them. Let them be exactly as they are. Be fully immersed. Follow them as they go through their progression. You're not trying to make them go away. You're not make them be something else. Just let them be what they are. Anger, resentment, fear, sadness. Those, what people label as negative, and that's a label, emotions, when you can just be with them, allow them to be what they are, and you keep breathing. Even if you want to choke the living, you know, out of somebody, it's like, if it's your honest feeling, feel it, and you, as you continue to breathe into it, it will, in vast majority, it will go through transformation.
But I hear what you're saying. You can't just live in the clouds. We have to be in our reality. I hear you. And I understand how it happens, because we're so dependent on control. We want to have control because that makes us feel safe, and then we don't have to fear. So I understand why people do it. Like, I get it. And I've done it. I've controlled so I didn't have to fear.
Yeah. So what's real important here is what I'm getting to is just feel your authentic feeling, emotional responses, whatever you feel, feel it, breathe into it. Under conditions, these extreme examples I gave, you may continue to feel anger or resentment. I experienced a lot of trauma growing up in my childhood and adolescence. I don't at this point feel the anger. I don't feel the pain, the devastation that I used to. I feel the traumas I experience are much less in comparison to people's in some of these other parts of the world. So many of us, if we got a divorce, breakup, and I feel for the most part, our parents do the best they can. Some of our parents maybe didn't, and some are quite abusive. But depending on what happened or a circumstance, if there is physical sexual abuse, and maybe some instances we do feel maybe cutting off that connection might be the thing we need to do for our own self-preservation, for our survival. But as I said, for the most part, I do feel our parents did the best they could with the resources. Sometimes they were overwhelmed with their own stresses and just were coping the best they could. But as we process these emotions, as we digest them, do the deep level process, we come to that place of acceptance, forgiveness for our parents, for ourselves. And it does increase our capacity to love, and helps to build the connections with our own self, or integration, acceptance, compassion for ourselves, with a deepening connection with our family members, our friends, our loved ones, members of the community.
And I found, and I'm not perfect at this by any means, but I found if I can share my reality, my emotion that I'm going through, how, and not blaming, just say, this is how I'm feeling right now. And it opens the other person up to say, yeah, I'm feeling this way, or that's not really how I meant for this to come across. But if you can open up and be genuine from your heart, accepting that everything you're feeling is valid and that you're not trying to blame, you're just sharing your reality, that opens that other person up to say, oh yeah, this is where I am. And it's very freeing. And even if you're doing it with somebody who's not used to doing it, they sometimes feel like you're blaming them. And then you can just come back and say, no, this isn't to blame you. This is all me. And just keep reminding, because they will, if they had a paradigm or a trauma or some kind of bonding experience where they were made to feel shame and guilt, I mean, you're helping them get through it. But just owning where you are and not letting them take on the responsibility of your emotion is a very powerful way to build a relationship or to heal. And like you said, some things you just need to let go. But that doesn't mean it didn't mean something at one time. Like, you don't just be, we're not a whitewash. I think that's a problem with a lot of the mass consciousness right now, is like, well, either everything's really bad or everything's really good. And we can't have like, well, it served me once and that time has passed. Like, it's like, we're not allowed to have seasons. We're not allowed to have like layers of emotions and relationships that are perfect just because they happened. And then we move on. Like, we have all these attachments, and maybe it's part of our control paradigm that, you know, if something was good, we just want to covet it and hold on to it. And that just makes scarcity, and it makes it hard for you to create new memories with that person or with another person who, you know, there's an endlessness of possibilities is what I'm trying to say. And if you put all your focus on one thing or one situation that was once good, you could cloud yourself from living your full life of love, which is full of possibilities and full of adventure and self-awareness and self-forgiveness. Because if you can't be okay and accept your own emotions, how are you going to be there for somebody else? Like, you know, when you're dulling your emotions, when you're escaping, and if you find yourself doing this, then it's a big sign that it's not the other person. It's not the failed relationship. It's something you're not being real to yourself about. So I hear that message coming through.
There's also the fact that we have these lived experiences beginning from, you know, probably from the time we're in the womb, and infancy, childhood, adolescence, into our adulthood. And so it's we live through these experiences, and then we have our subsequent emotional responses. And there's a way in which that crystallizes, gels, forms holding patterns. And when we're not processing these emotions or lived experiences, and they freeze up inside of us, but underneath that, there's this inner core being that gets covered over. And what I find is, like, for me, doing the deep level processing, working with my emotions, doing the various interventions, doing deep tissue body work, working with gifted healers, going through the vision quest, the 4 days and nights alone in the mountains without food and water. As I go through all these experiences, and it's like stripping down these layers of that we build up, and we all do. We build up these layers, and what happens is more of that core being emerges and become more of the embodiment of that, but there's also much more of a fluidity. Mm. So there's a greater ability to let go and sometimes, you know, there are things that were very meaningful to us and people we love, experiences that we want to continue to have, and yet everything's in the state of motion. And so sometimes there's the sadness to see people and things go. Mm-hmm. They're part of our lives. They move off and get married, and they're no longer available to us because they're so involved in their spouse. Mm-hmm. And they die. And they leave the planet, and the world is just changing so rapidly.
Like how you brought up that you know, that place in yourself where everything's calm and everything's good and you're connected. And it's a myth. The disconnection is a myth. It's a myth that we create to hold on to something that we think we need to hold on to. But it, like you said, when you get quiet and connect to that part of yourself that knows that everything's okay, that even though something is scary, you're going to make it. You're going to be okay. But the static and the chaos can make you forget, to forget that divinity inside of you. So just remember, when you're working with someone, is it energetic through what you've learned through the wisdom, the ancient wisdom practices, or is it more contemplative, or do you do both? Or I'm curious when you're...
There are times I'm working with elderly people and it fascinates me because a lot of times I will see them, you know, having gone through so many years of their lives, they're holding the residual of all those lived experiences, whatever they've gone through, raising their children, they have them, marriages, and even the wounding that extends from their childhood. And so I'll see them, their bodies become much more like the internal organs and systems start functioning better. They're alive and vital, and their lights are coming back on, they're more lucid. And I'll see them sometimes going through developmental stages that go back to their childhood and teens. But with adolescents and people in their 20s, what I enjoy so much about working with them is that there's this newness and innocence, and they haven't yet accumulated so much baggage. I can see the emotional wounding, the traumas that many of them carry, things that they've gone through, things they've experienced in their childhood, other traumatic experiences that have occurred, not as much stagnation. And so going quickly right to these deeply wounding experiences, it's being transformed, it's being digested, and it's building this foundation, and it's giving them this early start. And so like a lot of people, what happens is where the traumas begin in childhood and adolescence, and they start enacting that in their adult relationships. And it's this, all the messy drama of just like relationships that haven't worked, and there are kids that are in the midst of it. And so if I start working with them in their 30s and 40s and on, there's all this mess to clean up. Whereas I can, if I start them early on in adolescence or in their 20s, then there's not as much, and we can really get in deep quick and build this foundation that's going to carry forward through their 20s, 30s, on into their adult lives. It's given them an early head start. I work initially, I'm teaching them the series of meditation practices because that is so essential. We need to learn to work constructively with our emotions, to digest both our lived experiences and our subsequent emotional responses. This is an essential practice no matter what therapy or modality or whatever you're doing. You need this practice because if you're not digesting your lived experiences and your subsequent emotional responses, then it's any therapy or modality will only go so far. So you need this practice. It's crucial. The main part of the work, which is what was based on what was passed on to me through this Native American doctor and medicine man, I act as a conduit. Now, there's a lot of what you call energy work, and which is actually a very superficial level of work. And here in our Wonder Bread society, you know, bread is like devoid of nutrients. This deeper connection that a lot of indigenous peoples possessed. But indigenous peoples would go through these intensive practices. They didn't go through weekend workshops, 3-weekend workshops, and become master healer.
Right.
You apprentice. And these traditional native doctors, other indigenous healers from other traditions, typically took on maybe one or at most just a few apprentices, usually towards the end of their life. They would transmit all or maybe a portion of the healing gift or power. And like I said, my mentor transmitted portions of his healing powers, and then he would have me go on the vision quest at 4 days and nights to earn the right to work with these gifts or healing powers. Mm-hmm. So as I work with people like these indigenous healers of different traditions, I work as a conduit. There are other forces or beings that work. It goes way beyond what people think of as energy work. As I work with people, and my intention is not to criticize or put anyone down. I feel people are, for the most part, doing the best they can, but I've seen people have histories of childhood physical, sexual trauma. I look in the subtle bodies and the chakras, layers of the auras, sometimes grossly damaged or disfigured, and all those energy work sessions didn't really do much, if anything. And that damage or disfigurement is reflective of the emotional wounding, the trauma that's still held in the body, the imbalances as far as like the biochemical imbalances in the brain, the fact that the neural structure had impacted the development, or the trauma had impacted the development of the neural structure, all those deeply wounded emotions held in the body. So when I work with an individual, when you have an individual who works as a conduit on this level, so what happens is these beings, these forces work through me, and they go in, they actually take these lived experiences, these deeply wounding traumatic experiences, and the person goes into like a very deep, altered, like dreamlike state. The lived experiences, these highly charged emotions, they're being transformed, they're being transmuted. Mm-hmm. And as it happens, it's brought into a form so that it could actually be digested. When it sits there in the body for years or decades, it breaks down, it putrefies. It's like the food left in the back of your fridge for weeks and months, and it's no longer edible. So we transform these lived experiences, the emotions, the highly charged emotions, the fear, the grief, the anger, all these traumatic experiences, so that they're being digested, they're assimilated. Sometimes there's an intensity of emotion that surfaces afterwards, but you come out the other side as you digest it. You feel lighter. It's building this infrastructure, this foundation that never got to develop before. They're calmer, grounded, they're more present in their bodies. They're able to function, even become highly functional, able to assume roles of leadership, to work in whatever professional context of their whatever business or field or profession they're in. And so to me, it's very gratifying to see this transformation. And if you go through the conventional medical route studying allopathic medicine, it's many years of training through medical school, your medical school. And so if you're going to become a healer in these ancient traditions, it involves a similar commitment. It may involve traveling to other parts of the world and apprenticing a long apprenticeship, and it can be very arduous apprenticing with these native indigenous doctor healers.
Well, I appreciate all the travels you've taken to supplement your resume and your toolbox.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. I can tell you're committed, and it's just a beautiful calling. And thank you for saying yes. And thank you for going through everything you had to go through to clear out and to find your answers. So it's been a beautiful conversation. I'm so happy to share it.
Yeah, thank you for bringing me on, for giving me the opportunity to share.
Yeah, and I can encourage anyone. Ben has a YouTube channel and a website, and I'll put links to it in the show description so you can check it out. Or is there anything else that you want to share of how people can reach you?
Yeah, especially go to my website, Ben Ufana, OOFANA, so benufana.com. If someone is going through a breakup or divorce, there's a free ebook we can download, gettingoveryourbreakup.com. Or you can book a free call just like refiningrelationships.com. But especially if you go to my website, then ufana.com, there's a contact form and even a phone number there you can find and reach out, leave a message on my Google Voice. I will call you back. So
nice. Well, I know that so many times it's easy to try to escape or take a medicine to avoid. And I know that some people, like you said, if it's a medical condition and that, you know, they're self-injurious or, you know, there's some things you really need to take. But if you in your heart know that you're trying to avoid and not face it, then there's other options besides clouding your awareness. And I believe this, I'll die saying it, you know, you are eternal and you're divine. And we have this short time and this experience in this earth suit that we have. So I'm just trying to help everyone get through it a little easier and, you know, show myself grace. And hopefully through my self grace, I can help someone else find theirs. So I just delight in these conversations because it fuels my soul to continue sharing the message.
Me too.